Hello, and welcome to Pragmatic Live, Pragmatic Marketing's webinar and podcast series, where we tackle the biggest challenges facing today's product teams. My name is Rebecca Calajaris. I am the Vice President of Marketing at Pragmatic Marketing, and more importantly to you, the host for today's event. Today, we're going to take an innovative look at a topic that has probably kept more than one of us up at night, competitive intelligence. How do we get and keep an accurate eye on the competition when we're already so resource-tapped? And here to help us talk about this topic is a good friend of Pragmatic Marketing, Alan Armstrong, founder and CEO of Eigenworks, which is a win-loss and research firm in Toronto that works with B2B software companies around the world on their strategic initiatives. Good morning, Alan. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks, Rebecca.
All right, Alan, I know you have a lot to cover on this topic, so I'm going to let you take it away.
Right on. Well, it's great to be with you all. I'd like to start out today by asking you a few questions. Rebecca, can we start with the poll about roles?
You bet.
Okay. So as we're getting started here, I just want to, get the ball rolling and ask you to describe your role. Just trying to get a sense before we get rolling about who's with us and who's in the audience. We had a huge response to this topic and super excited about it. Want to sort of get a sense of who's here. And so, Rebecca, today we're going to be talking about how do you like that idea, three dysfunctions of competitive intelligence.
I mean, I meant it. I mean, it certainly kept me up at night. When some of the software companies, I worry, what am I not seeing, right? And maybe I'm looking at my known competitors, what I'm not seeing. It's just a stressful topic. Oh, look, we've got some answers. We're heavy in our product manager group, as expected.
Awesome. You know, I think it's what's really interesting about this is almost, like, very few people on the line actually refer to themselves as competitive intelligence, right? That's not the title and role that most of us have, but we have to do competitive intelligence. I think it's just particularly interesting that, 400 people plus are showing up to talk about competitive intelligence, and yet that's not our titles.
Mm.
And so how do we do CI when it's sort of, one of the things we do? And I think this topic should help with that. Also, we're going to be talking today about Agile and the use of Agile in strategy, competitive intelligence, and marketing. So I'm curious to hear how many of you use Agile and to what degree. Rebecca, I see people talking about Agile and Lean also. And in many of our buyer interviews, we hear the phrase, we're a really lean organization. And by that, they don't mean they follow lean practices. They mean we have really tight budgets and we don't hire enough people to do it.
We don't have enough people.
Yeah.
The realistic type of lean, but not really the intentional strategic version. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Exactly. Awesome.
People are in product management, and now we'll see where they are in the world with Agile.
Awesome. So this is a topic, Rebecca, that we've been developing over the past year. And I know that, the world of development has moved to Agile. And I think, when development moves to Agile, it sort of breaks a lot of other business processes, right? So, we got some poll results. You want to maybe just tell us what we're seeing here?
Sure. So it looks like very close, right? So we're pretty much evenly divided between those who are not Agile yet, those who use Agile to mean ad hoc is a little bit less, but we're not Agile yet. We talk about Agile. We use the language perhaps, but maybe haven't embraced the concepts, or 16% practice Agile consistently. So it's fairly divided, but a definite minority are fully engaged in it.
Great. Perfect. All right. So here's our agenda for today. We're going to talk about three dysfunctions of competitive intelligence efforts. And I'm sort of giving apologies there to Patrick Lencioni, who talks about the four dysfunctions of a team. Or is it five, Rebecca? I always forget that. I have four or five dysfunctions. Anyway.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Three dysfunctions of competitive intelligence efforts, and then how modern Agile, which we're going to introduce today, can be used to help accelerate competitive intelligence effort. So let's jump right in and talk about the three three dysfunctions of competitive intelligence efforts. So there are three problems with the way that most companies are doing competitive intelligence. The first is that we're competitor-centric, and so we might refer, I've heard some people say we should call it competitor intelligence because we study our competitors and what they're doing instead of understanding the market. The second point is that we execute in an ad hoc way, and so we're reacting to incoming information from the sales team and other places, executive suite and so on. And the third is that we are feature-centric, or we focus specifically on product features. And that's despite the fact that we know that buyers have a broader range of selection criteria than just looking at product features. And I can say from our experience at Eigenworks in interviewing literally thousands of B2B buyers making large technology investments, that product is the deciding factor only in a small minority of cases. I don't have a stat there, but I would guess we're sitting at around 20% for product. So if we're focusing just on product and features when we're looking at competitive intelligence, we have a problem. And so our job when we're doing competitive intelligence, you know, we saw that at least about half the audience is product managers. Very few of you call yourselves competitive intelligence as your role. And so we end up in a sort of reactive stance, and it can kind of feel like we're, you know, going to miss that ball as it goes by. And another way to look at that is that we, you know, we have panic in sales, or we could see that panic coming in from the executive suite, and we go in and, you know, I always hear this from salespeople. I just want that, you know, that killer feature. I just want to know how our features compare to their features. I want to know what our silver bullet is. And so we go out and we study our competitors. We do an ad hoc project to solve a particular problem. We focus on features. And what we end up doing is following our competitors, and we end up with undifferentiated products. You know, this is another thing that we see in our work with product vendors, B2B product vendors, in win-loss analysis and also churn retention analysis, is that many buyers have a very hard time distinguishing between vendors in a market and products in a market. You know, overwhelmingly often we hear, they all look the same to me. And I think that's a symptom of this problem, that we are actually studying competitors, doing it in an ad hoc way, and focusing on features. And so if we had a cycle of how we develop sales enablement, marketing, positioning, and product requirements, it would start with this thing that we call competitor research. And so our suggestion today is that we can turn this around. And there are a few different shifts that I'm going to talk about. So the first shift is to look at, and actually all the shifts are sort of included in this idea of modern agile. I'll be curious to hear during our Q&A of how many people have actually looked at modern agile. It's a refresh of the Agile Manifesto, which by now is over 15 years old. And they call it a simpler, sturdier, streamlined ways to be agile. After practicing in this field for over 10 years, the founders of modern agile, and there's a photo of one of the guys there, wanted to simplify it and break it down into four key areas. And so we're going to talk about each of those areas: making people awesome, delivering value continuously, making safety a prerequisite, and experimenting and learning rapidly as principles that we can use in the competitive intelligence field to adopt and adapt Agile for our purposes. Okay, so we've done the work of taking these four areas of modern Agile, and you can find more information on modern Agile. It's modernagile.org is their website. And we've translated those in a color-coded way. I just love their colors, in fact, into four areas of competitive intelligence. So the first one that they talk about with a big heart at the top is called making people awesome. Make people awesome. And so From our perspective, after studying buyers for 9 years now, we've started to focus in on what we call the hero's journey of our buyers. So we'll talk more about that in a little bit here, but you know, many of you are doing journey mapping, and I'm going to propose an upgrade to your journey language so that you, when you're talking about journeys, you're talking about a hero's journey, and we'll talk about what the implications are of that. The second piece, delivering value continuously, for in the field of CI, value equals insight. We don't care what you did, who you talked to, what your process is. We care about what insights you have and how you can back that up. The third area, making safety a prerequisite. It's an interesting word to use, safety. And, you know, really what I, as I've worked with teams on this, it's about making it okay to be wrong. You know, we talk about the importance of embracing failure, and you can say as much as you want about that, but it's really hard to do in practice. It's okay to say it's okay to be wrong, but then when you actually are wrong or somebody on your team is wrong, how do you embrace that and actually make that true? And if you can't do that, then the whole thing falls down because people don't feel safe to take risks. And that really leads into the fourth area, which is experimenting and learning rapidly. And so in competitive intelligence, although we talk about not being as reactive, we need to be responsive to the questions that emerge. And what we find as we do this with teams is that, you know, we start out with a backlog of research topics, the research questions that we want to look at, and we'll talk about building a backlog coming up here. But then as we answer some questions, new questions emerge. And so we need to constantly be working and grooming that backlog based on the insights that we've developed. And so those four principles we've borrowed shamelessly from the Modern Agile group. And I want to double click on, I used to always say double click, but I think I have to double tap on, I have to upgrade my language on each of those four areas. So the first one is making people awesome, and that is focusing on your buyer and the hero's journey of the buyer. So the first part that I want to talk about that is start with buy. Now, okay, everybody's going to say, oh, you know, groan. There's a little bit of an allusion here to the Simon Sinek book called Start with Why. So we talked about one of the dysfunctions of competitive intelligence being that we are focused on our competitors. And if we want to just turn that around, you know, some people will say, well, we should read analyst reports or news and all these different signals of inputs from the market. I want to say you got to make it your priority to study buying decisions. So what are those things that are influencing whether someone chooses to buy something, it's buy one or buy none, or by you or by someone else? I think Pragmatic uses the phrase, will I, and if I will, then which one? I really love that phrase. So we want to focus on those will I and which one decisions. If we look just at those, both at the point of purchase as well as the point of renewal, upsell, cross-sell, which is becoming increasingly important with subscription-based services, those are the insights that are going to help us improve retention, improve the way we attract customers, and so on. And so we want to suggest that to turn things around, your first step is to start with your buyer. And so as opposed to the competitor as the first step, we want to say that the first step you need to do in competitive intelligence is start by studying buyer decisions. Okay, so that's the first shift. Now, There's the shift, actually. There's both diagrams together. So rather than competitor research being the first thing, buyer research is the first thing. And then after we do buyer research, we can find those themes that are important to our buyers and then drill down on just those things in our competitors. So one of the things we learn when we study buyers is that all of these things that we claim about ourselves, of those, buyers only care of about a small fraction of them. Furthermore, things that we are copying about our competitors' features or their low implementation costs or their free onboarding sessions or whatever the thing is that we're copying about our competitor, our buyers don't always care about those either. So why are we investing resources in building something that our competitor thought was important? So we're going to start by looking at the buyer research and then investigating our competitors after we do buyer research. It's not that you don't want to study competitors at all. All right, so now we're going to kick off a big look at how do we make buyers awesome. We're going to start by looking at that buyer. But, you know, a lot of us when we're doing this in our field, we're looking at buyer journeys, right? And I've looked at so many people's buyer's journeys. Every new client that we bring on board, we make sure we look at their buyer's journeys. You know, most of them suffer from two major problems. Okay, so the first problem is that most of the journeys that you are mapping are ambling walks in the park. They're a little too boring, or they don't have the sort of important outcomes that your buyers need. Okay, so you know, it's not that, I mean, actually, when I look at this picture, I think, wow, it'd be actually nice if it was Sunday today to go out for a walk in the park. But most of our buyers in B2B have way higher stakes outcomes than what this kind of a journey might suggest. You know, really, when you zoom out on the journeys that your buyers are on, they look a lot more like this one, where there are perilous mountains on both sides, you know, a challenging river in the middle, you know, threatening weather and so on. Your buyer's journey can't be a walk in the park, okay? So the way that we've found to upgrade your buyer journeys for competitive intelligence is to think of it in this way as a heroic effort with a quest. And we're borrowing the terms of the hero's journey by Joseph Campbell, and I'll touch on that a little bit. But the essence is you want to profile the high-stakes outcomes that your buyers need to achieve. When you're having those buyer discussions, you need to engage your buyers as a hero in their own journey. Okay, so we're not going to start by asking them why they did something or why they did something else or whatever. We're looking for the high stakes, must succeed kinds of outcomes that they have inherent to their jobs and their jobs to be done. Okay? And so we've crystallized those ideas in what we think is an upgrade to the persona idea that we call buyer as hero. And we'll talk about some resources that where you can use those ideas to upgrade your personas. Oops, I got ahead of myself here. All right, one of the key areas within the buyer as hero framework and when you're studying buyers is the idea of fundamental delta or F delta. That is, what is the big heroic quest or change that your buyer needs to achieve? And then can we evaluate competitive strengths and weaknesses against whether or not those strengths and weaknesses help our buyers achieve their fundamental delta? It's the most efficient way to prioritize competitive strengths and weaknesses. Okay, we give whole talks on just buyer as hero. I just wanted to touch on it though, because the first shift needs to be from studying competitors to studying buyers. Okay, now what about Agile? Well, part of Agile is making people awesome, so that's why we're starting with buyers and heroes' journeys of our buyers. But there's also a way that we develop and execute a program. And rather than acting in that sort of ad hoc way, we want to move towards something that looks more like a Kanban with a backlog, prioritized backlog, and series of research questions. And so in order to talk about how you can move in that direction, I'm going to actually showcase the experience of one of our clients who's been building and implementing an agile approach as well. So the client is called Blackbaud. Blackbaud's a leading vendor in a number of markets. Their main core market started out in the fundraising world, but they're expanding that as well. They've been around for several decades and are now, in a sense, kind of reinventing themselves as a company. And one of the core pieces of their strategy is this idea of agile competitive intelligence. And so Allison's driving that effort for them. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the journey that they went on in order to transform to an agile approach. So Blackbaud started out a couple of years ago with specific project-based research, doing CI projects. Okay, so the first CI project was a direct head-to-head comparison of a major competitor. How are they beating us? How bad is it? Where are we beating them? What are the kinds of things that we can do to counter them? And tons of learning came out of that. They have a huge portfolio of products, and so the next major CI project that they did was a product-specific one. What's not working, what's working, and looking specifically at one product line. Third, they moved into a vertical focused CI project where one particular vertical, I think it was maybe higher education, had some specific research goals, and so they conducted, with our help, a CI project in that area. Now, that was good. That delivered a lot of insights. It's not that that was a bad approach, but what they wanted to do is to make it a more continuous delivery of value. And so they, Allison really drove the effort using some work that I believe she borrowed or she learned from CEB, the Conference Executive Board, where they really recommended that that as part of a strategic planning process, a company needs to have strategic assumptions. Now, strategic assumptions can form part of a basis of the business plan. But what we know from Agile is that we need to decompose our what Eric Ries calls leap of faith assumptions, or our hypothesis. We need to say that our beliefs about the market are actually hypotheses that we have. And so it's translating it, that's that fourth principle of experimentation. We're translating assumptions into hypotheses, and then breaking them down into research experiments. So we prioritized with them a number of research experiments into to determine which ones were the highest risk and what type of intelligence did they need. There were also questions about which ones are we most confident about or least confident about. Okay, so they've gone through a process now of translating strategic assumptions, decomposing those into atomic assumptions, and we're going to talk about some what those actually look like. And then once we have the atomic assumptions, we can test research experiments. And we can have an ongoing set of research experiments where we're doing rapid polling conversations, drawing stats from various industry sources and so on, and flowing those insights and research back. And then finally, creating between 3 and 5 research epics where we're looking at a big topic and then and then answering a big epic question. So in software development, when we talk about epics, right, we're talking about a large collection of themed user stories. In the case of research epics, we're talking about themed research. And so we developed this process that you can use in order to tear down strategic assumptions and make them testable as hypotheses. At that point, I'm going to show what a year's worth of Agile CI would look like then. If you want to embark on this, we suggest starting out with a time in which you develop your CI program. And so that involves developing strategic assumptions that the company can all agree to. There's a lot of work involved in that. And then pulling together key decision makers in your company to tear down those strategic assumptions and into atomic assumptions and then prioritize them. That work in that first quarter or so can then seed the Agile process of delivering continuous insights throughout your year, okay? So we're going to end up out of this initial workshop with a backlog of responsive hot topic interviews that we can look at. Then commission individual research projects or probes or gathering research from industry sources to be able to answer those. And then out of the workshop also, or the prioritization, the backlog prioritization, should also come some big assumptions that we need to test. And then we put those into more of an epic, and each one of those epics will take about 8 to 12 weeks to conduct. And so we want to end up with a stream of hot topic research, as well as research epics that get spaced in sprints throughout the year. And so this is a way to start to spread out and programatize your CI efforts so that you can deliver continuous value. Okay, so how do we break assumptions down? So what we're trying to drive towards is really a Kanban, right, where we would be looking at different types of intelligence, what kinds of questions do we want to ask, and so we're going to create stickies or individual research questions that we put into our backlog the way we would put into a development backlog. And there are lots of places you can learn about how to prioritize that kind of stuff or develop a Kanban board. And then move them forward at the rate in which we can accept them. So we need to establish work in progress limits so that we are readying our next experiments or list of buyer questions that we want to talk about or industry research that we need to draw and so on. So there are different kinds of intelligence and we want to identify which kind of intelligence it is so that we can determine where that information is going to come from. Now, the question then becomes, how do we populate this Kanban board? It's easy to draw a Kanban board. It's harder to populate it and use it. So what we've developed and we can give to you for your own use is this is the fundamental unit that you want to work with. This is what we call an atomic assumption. And so we work with a strategic assumption about our business, and then we break it down into what we call an atomic assumption. Now, the atomic assumption should be almost like a user story. It has to be small enough that we could ask the question and get a concise answer. One of the things we found is that when companies develop strategic assumptions about their business that they state in their business case, those assumptions tend to be so huge that it's hard to say how they could be tested. And so we have to break the strategic assumptions down into small assumptions that can be tested. So I'm going to walk you through these cards. Now, Many of you say you've been working with Agile already, so you're used to the idea of a card. I'm going to talk about how this card can be used to isolate an atomic assumption that can be tested. So the first thing we want to have is a short title. So this might be something along the lines of a sentence that says that we believe, you know, the most important thing to our buyers is integration among our product lines. That's a single sentence that can be tested. We might then elaborate on that with a longer description. We're going to say why we believe this hypothesis or assumption to be true. And then we're going to say, okay, how confident are we on whether this thing is true or not? So the nice thing about this is that we can put out an assumption, but say we have low confidence in it. Or we can put out an assumption, say we're highly confident about this, but if we're wrong, the impact of that will be very high. So there's another rating here that you can say, okay, you know, we're very confident, but the impact of being wrong is high, so that would make this a something that we ought to really make sure is true before we really lock in plans to use this assumption. And then the next area is, if we're developing this card as a group, how much consensus do we have as a group about this assumption? So this is another safety mechanism. So people can say, okay, we have these assumptions. I was in this group. I helped develop this assumption. But I'm going to tell you, I don't believe it. You know, you guys say your confidence is high, impact of being wrong is high, but I'm registering a problem with that. So we can say that our group consensus is low. And so those combined sliders, if you will allow you to, this is how we're going to prioritize the Agile CI backlog. Okay. And I'll show you a means for doing that in just a second using a workshop where we ran this kind of protocol and came up with some pretty cool findings. And then we're going to say why we think this assumption is true. We can also say why we think it's not true. We can basically enumerate our arguments for and against this hypothesis. Okay, then we're going to talk about, okay, if we were going to test this hypothesis, what kind of intelligence might we need to gather? So there can be buyer intelligence, which we've just talked about. There could be intelligence about our competitors. You know, we believe that best of breed providers in our market will not pursue amalgamation and industry consolidation. Okay, that's an assumption that we're going to make for the next 18 months, let's say. That's intelligence that we need to study. We need to study competitors' plans in order to answer that type of assumption. So that would fall into the competitor intelligence. Market intelligence could be overall total addressable market, growth market growth rates, and so on. There are a number of things like that. And then the fourth type of intelligence is internal fact-finding. You know, our team's capacity is to develop, you know, four new product epics every two quarters or something like that, or some assumptions that depend on things that we know about ourselves. In the world of SaaS and cloud, one of the really big assumptions about internal fact-finding are in the areas of cost accounting. So we can deliver this kind of service at this kind of cost. Also, retention. We want to count on a certain amount of retention. And so whether or not we're achieving those kinds of retention would amount to a question of internal fact-finding. We can go to the customer's success or to the CFO and find out answers to those questions. Okay, so by filling out this card, all of a sudden we have a ton of information that's going to help us. Now, when you go through this kind of process, you're going to end up with, you know, somewhere in the order of 10 to 12 assumptions It'd be nice if there were a smaller number. And then each of those assumptions is going to break down into somewhere between 3 and 7 atomic assumptions. So if you just do the quick math on that, you say you have 10 assumptions and they're each an average of 5 atomic assumptions, the question is, which ones matter? How do we determine what we're going to focus on? So using some of the metrics and sliders that we've talked about here, what we recommend is developing a two-quadrant grid. And so the first part of the grid is how confident are we in whether this assumption is true or false? And so we can say we would have low confidence over on the left and high confidence over on the right. And then we want to these are the sliders that we talked about earlier. And then if we want to look at the impact of being wrong, we would say there would be a low impact of being wrong at the bottom and a high impact of being wrong at the top. And there are different ways you can organize these, but those two axes are going to help us prioritize. And then we're going to take those individual cards, and we're going to end up with about 50 of them, and we're going to put them up on a board, and we're going to find out the things where we have either low confidence and high impact of being wrong, which is a big problem, right? We're not confident in the assumption. If we're wrong about that assumption, that's a problem. There are also the ones where we may be confident, but if we're wrong, it's going to be a really big deal. You know, I heard another company use the phrase. I asked another company that we were working with recently, what's the value of validating your assumptions? Because, you know, when I come back with some findings, and if a client says, or in your internal world, if you're bringing findings to an executive team, and they say, yeah, this confirms what we believed was true. Sometimes I've in my career been disappointed when I hear that, because I always want to bring fresh new insights. But this CEO told me that actually validating assumptions is a risk mitigation for him as a CEO. It's a risk mitigation when he's going to the board and he's really doubling down. It helps him make more confident investments and double down on specific initiatives. So this idea of validating assumptions that are high impact and that we think are true is also valuable. Okay. And so what we end up with when we do this kind of ranking scheme, this kind of prioritization, are clusters of assumptions that we need to test. Okay. So using those clusters of those individual atomic assumptions, we're going to see those on our board, and then we can then look at them and try to find either individual atomic assumptions that we want to test, or even theme them a little bit so that we can get more bang for our buck. So we're going to put those assumptions onto our Kanban, develop a backlog of those, and then work through them systematically using the program that we suggested there. Obviously, doing this is a pretty big undertaking, and so you might be thinking, you know, is this really going to get me ahead? There is definitely a significant investment to transforming your CI into an agile sort of program. You know, creating a program that looked like the one that we suggested here, you know, we're talking about a year-long project with a full quarter or two of developing strategic assumptions, getting teams together to prioritize the backlog. So it's definitely not for the faint of heart. But I think if we ask the question, you know, how long did it take our R&D team to transform to become a fully functioning agile environment and team? Those transformations actually took a very, very long time. So this could be a sort of goal that you set and an idea that you start to cultivate in order to start the transformation. You know, maybe you want to start with project-oriented, buyer-centric competitive intelligence projects. And then once you build success with those, then, you know, invest in developing a more, you know, a more continuous delivery sort of scheme. But if you deliver three big projects over the course of a year, it's going to look pretty continuous to the teams around you. This is just this addition of the epics that are tied together to this backlog of assumptions is just an upgrade to that approach. Okay, I always feel like when I deliver this topic, we could spend a ton of more time on each of these things. I do want to say that we're going to be continuing to flesh out these ideas. The page here, eigenworks.com/pragmatic for pragmatic marketing, will get you access to a lot of the resources and meat on the bones that will help you flesh all of this out. In addition, I am looking to create a practitioner webinar where we would look at how this played out in practice with one of our clients who has actually invested heavily in this. We talked about Allison earlier. We might be able to do that with Allison. I'm trying to organize that. But in any case, we're going to develop. We're going to have more sessions like this so that we can drill down on the individual topics. But that's an overview of how to transform your competitive intelligence to an agile approach. And I think with that, I'd just like to come back to the piece on modern agile. Remember these themes, making people awesome, looking at hero's journey of your buyer, focusing on the insights you provide to the business, not on the process you use to deliver those, and so deliver value in a continuous way, making it okay to be wrong and experimenting with things, embracing failure. If you have people reporting to you, that's the best way to start embracing failure is to acknowledge your own mistakes and then to look at mistakes of others and say, how can we learn from that? I really want, you know, celebrate that actively. And then finally, developing a program where you can be responsive to emerging questions without reacting to the particular storm that might be coming in today from the sales team or executive suite.
We talked about a lot of things today. If you were going to have people do two things differently tomorrow based on the stuff we talked about today, what would it be? Little steps towards making the change.
I would say identify the area of biggest opportunity or biggest risk in your business. So those are two possibilities. Maybe there's a big opportunity or maybe there's a big risk. If you've got a big risk, identify the assumption that you're going on that's risky, and then interview some buyers to test whether that assumption is true or false. Even if you only conduct 5 or 10 interviews, you can come back and summarize those findings and say, I think we need to invest in a deeper dive into whether this assumption is true or not. So I would say just identify a high-stakes assumption and go test it and bring back some data and then say, you know what, I just did this in my spare time. Wouldn't it be a good idea if we invested a little bit to test whether our assumptions are true or false? You know what, those are both of my recommendations. So if it's one or two things, just do that one.
Awesome.
Is that okay?
No, that's okay. Perfect. All right. Thank you, Alan, very much. And thanks to all
my
of
pleasure.
You for joining us today. That does it for this edition of Pragmatic Live. Thank you for joining us, and have a great rest of the week.